Friday, May 1st. Welcome. It's might be uploading this a little late because we didn't have any power today and outside in Philadelphia from really bad storms, and so we were able to rig up a generator and make sure we get this thing out. So if the microphone cuts off in the middle of the broadcast, then you know that the generator's probably out of gas or someone has stolen it. You never know. It's one or the other. Thomas Paine Podcast, Friday, May 1st, 2020, and things are heating up out there, folks. I literally have been just doing stuff around here all day, and I haven't read any, really been on top of the news much. I heard from, I got a message from Sidney Powell, Mike Flynn's attorney, and I said, yeah, I've been kind of out of it today because we don't have any power. And she said, well, she didn't have any power either. It's like, it's a crazy day on parts of the East Coast. So I hope you're staying on top of the General Flynn information that's coming out. It's very interesting, and we'll be talking about that next week as more things unfold. From what I'm hearing, more things are going to be unfolding, so we will stay on top of that. And shout out to all my friends out there and my supporters on patreon.com/truepundit. Things are going well on that front, and we're getting a lot of support from folks, and that's good for us because we sure can use it. It's tough out there. You know, I realize it. So it goes a long way, the support that we're getting. And I know that it's tough out there. So we do appreciate it. My challenge is today, see if we can get through the newscast without doing any stories on meat. We are on a meat streak for the last probably month. We've been way ahead of the meat situation. So we're doing a video podcast on patreon.com/truepundit of these daily news podcasts. And let's just jump right into it. I haven't even seen this stuff. Sometimes I glance over it for like 30 seconds or less. I haven't even seen it because we just literally got this a couple lights back on. And I think there's two or three people on a treadmill right now outside the office generating electricity so we can run the mics. Headline. Protesters took to the Michigan Capitol Thursday against the governor's stay-at-home order. Looks like this got a little rowdy. And I can't say that we didn't start predicting some of this a long time ago. I mean a long time ago. Like a year ago. But especially Michigan, but these recent events have definitely exacerbated some anxiety. So dozens of protesters gathered outside of the Michigan Capitol building, waving signs and carrying fart. The story from CBS Detroit says, and carrying firearms. These were firearms that were very concerned for other people. They're carrying C-A-R-I-N-G. They are carrying firearms. I didn't know you could buy those. Is that an option? Where do they sell those at? Firearms with a conscience. The new thing. I'll change it for them. Carrying firearms. Demanding to end the state-ordered stay-at-home order. What do you expect from CBS Detroit? Is anybody even reading in Detroit anymore? Protesters. Placards read, shut down the lockdown, no work, no freedom, and tyrants get the rope. I like tyrants get the rope. I like that. It's catchy. Tyrants get the rope. Tyrants get the rope. I didn't hear these guys, but it's got a good flow to it. And no shutdown, no shut down the lockdown, no work, no freedom. That seems passe, but tyrants get the rope. Tyrants get the rope. I could get behind that, you know? And that could apply in many. I could use that at Citigroup when I was at Citigroup. Tyrants get the rope in these big meetings we used to have with 75 to 100 people on a conference call. Can you believe it? You're caller number 89. I'm like, oh, okay. Do I really need to be here? Some people wore the Don't Tread on Me flag as a cape. Others chanted, lock her up, about the governor. So people are at their boiling point in Michigan. And I would anticipate this will play over in maybe a town near you or one that you live in if things don't start improving. Joni George of Flushing said, the virus is here. It's going to be here. It's time to let people go back to work. That's all there is to it. That really is all there is to it, right? Short and sweet and simple. From Joni George of Flushing. Deal with it. Let's get on with this, right? Can't really get comfortable here reading. We'll try this. I'm away from the mic. I don't have the monitors I usually have. So it's tough. It's tough when you're. We had dinner tonight by like candlelight. Not that it was Don Juan and it was any romantic thing, but I said, well, we got the pandemic and we got no electricity and all we need now is famine. Famine and, headline, U.S. weekly jobless claims hit 3.84 million, topping 30 million over the last 6 weeks. And then my kids bet me at the dinner table that I couldn't get a generator to start that's been like sitting out in some dusty corner of the driveway for a long time. And I told them I could get it to start. And they said I couldn't. So we wagered like what we always wager in our house, food. On it. And I lost. I lost bad. Well, I said I could get it started within 5 minutes because it's a dependable quality item. And they were laughing at me. And I came in after 3.5 minutes and they said, you still have 1.5 minutes left. Go back out there. I said, this thing's not starting. I'm not wasting 1.5 minutes. I know if the thing's going to kick over or not. You know what I mean, guys? Guys out there or some of the ladies that might be mechanics or mechanically inclined. You know within like 1.5 minutes whether you stand a chance. And I didn't stand a chance. So it 5 minutes turned into about 5 hours. But get out the old wrench set and you go to work. The old days when we used to drop engines in the street in suburban Philadelphia. Yeah. We're changing the oil and the engine. Don't worry about it, officer. We'll be done in a day. Boys better clean this crap up. Stuff all over the street. U.S. weekly jobless claims climbed by 3.84 million, bringing the total to 30 million over the last 6 weeks. Jesus. Jobless claims for the week ended April 25th came in at the lowest level since March 21st, but bring the rolling six-week total to 30.3 million as part of the worst employment crisis in U.S. history. Claims hit a record 6.87 million for the week of March 28th and have declined each week since then. Declined? Let's say 30 million. You know, we'll talk about it after. I'll see if this story says it. Continuing claims rose to just shy of 18 million, a rise of 2.2 million from the previous week. The Economic Policy Institute earlier this week estimated that the current claims level probably undercounts by as much as 12 million of those who are eligible for benefits but not getting them due to the inability to file or other roadblocks. Like you can't get online or you're on hold or the cement heads answering the phone aren't helping you, or they put you on hold for 6-7 hours. I mean, I've heard all kind of horror stories. Gross domestic product contracted 4.8% in the first quarter, according to a government report Wednesday that expected to look much worse when the final revisions are in and only begins to show how much damage has been done. I got to take a drink. My mouth is behind my brain by about a second. So I'm mumbling and I got to reel it in. I didn't stare at the computer and work at the computer for 9 hours today, so I'm a little rusty maybe. The most recent claims data comes ahead of next week's non-farm payrolls report of April. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell said Wednesday that the unemployment rate is likely to rise above 10% from the March level of 4.4%, which counted a period before the intense social distancing policies went into effect. Powell is kidding himself if he thinks the actual unemployment rate is 10%. I mean, he's absolutely kidding himself, and so is anybody else. Non-farm payrolls for April are expected to show a decline of 2.25 million with the unemployment rate of 15.1%. Wow, that's a little bit better. Certainly better than 10%. Pal. Get a job, pal. Oh, we lost out. Where are the sound effects at? Where are we lost out? Is there a boo button here? Let me see what we got.
You may cut me, man, but I'm going to wrap this chain around your head.
Now we got Joe Biden, and what are these other buttons here?
You're a real crumb bum.
Oh, that's Mayor Rizzo.
You're a crumb creep coward.
All right, well, we don't have the good sound effects. I'm sorry. Those cost extra. As soon as we get some advertisers signed, we'll get some new sound effects. I was looking for a boo button. Why don't we have the applause button? And I forgot we had Mayor Frank Rizzo on the soundboard. He always will have a place on the soundboard no matter what. Growing up with Mayor Rizzo, he didn't mess around. My disappointment that a meat-related story has appeared. Of course, I'm only kidding because this really is a very important topic. And you know what I've noticed? Because I've been in the business a while. I noticed that business-related journalism, and not so much news or political news, business journalism is winning the day lately because people are worried about, one, finances, two, unemployment, three, investments, right? Four, food, five, food, six, the economy. So business-related journalism is blowing political-related journalism in an election year out of the water, and you don't usually see that. And I've noticed that, and it's very interesting, but it's not surprising given the circumstances. People are worried about their money. They're worried about the future. They're worried about their careers. They're worried about their jobs. They're worried about their investments, if they have investments. They're worried about their pensions, and they're worried about the ability to put bread on the table and continuing ability to put bread on the table, pay for sky-high health insurance, especially in times when many employers might have cut you off and now you're paying full freight for your health insurance. I don't see a lot of these issues being addressed, though, from D.C. It's frustrating. I know you're frustrated out there, too. This is real talk, right? I mean, we are out here in survival mode. And I don't think we're getting the love and respect from the federal government that we expect. I mean, you have to really start thinking. And I'm not really on Friday in a mood to start a revolution because it's been a long week. If these guys aren't going to bail you out and help you out, what the hell are we paying them for? It's a very important question to start contemplating. I'm sure you already have. While meat companies, I didn't even start the story, so why am I reading it? Meat companies want to reopen, but officials fear new wave of coronavirus infections. Yeah, because this dope Fauci is out there spreading more fear. Just because you're a Napoleon-sized midget, okay, we're up here. We're another foot and a half above where you are. So the germ population and the virus population up here is a little bit different, okay? You're like a lawn jockey. It's tough down there. President Trump's executive order allowing the meat. I apologize to all lawn jockeys out there. I didn't mean to besmirch them. It's an insult to all lawn jockeys comparing them to Fauci. President Trump's executive, and I think they probably have more medical credentials or pretty close to it, right? Dr. Scholes is probably more qualified. President Trump's executive order allowing meatpacking plants to continue operating through the coronavirus pandemic is stirring concerns among local officials, wary of new spikes and infections of closed plants rushed to open. Local officials are the ones that are least qualified to handle any type of a panic or crisis situation. I found covering politics and dealing with local governments for a long time in my career, probably far more than most people, because I really came up through the ranks, and I found it it's tough for a blonde-haired white dude in the media to get ahead. And you can read between the lines unless you have to be really talented. And I'll just I'll stop right there before I get myself in trouble. So you tend to have to really work your way up. But local officials are the most feckless politicians that are out there. Right, if Washington, D.C. is the professional league and state government is the minor league, local government, I don't even know what it is, right? It's the minor league. It's, we'll call it Bush League. I like it. It's Bush League. Mr. Trump's directive issued Tuesday invokes a Korean War era law to shift authority over meat plant operations to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Oh, geez. The move shields meat companies from the pressure that city, county, and state leaders have put on some meat plants this month to shut down after rising infection rates. Whoops. That was my face on the microphone. It's been that kind of day. USDA... Maybe I'll just do a show where I just bang my face on the microphone all day. I can't take it anymore. USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue said, I would hope these local, I guess maybe I should talk like a chicken, but I won't. I would hope these local communities are truly altruistic in their desire to feed America, Mr. Perdue said. I know these companies are and want to get back open. Hey, Sonny, okay, you're a farmer. Start talking like a farmer, altruistic. Take it easy with the big words, okay? It's a pandemic out here. We don't even have electricity. I can't go fumbling around for a dictionary. In some cases, he said plants were mistakenly blamed for being the source of COVID-19 outbreaks versus the virus's general spread in communities. You know, I actually think that a lot of these folks, these big places, are using the virus as some kind of excuse to cut down workforces and maybe bring in some visa type folks, HB1 visa replacements and things like that, because they were shutting factories down because certain cases of COVID-19 were being traced back to the factories. The people weren't sick. They were being traced back. And I'm saying, oh, what the hell does that mean? Especially Smithfield, right? It's owned by a Chinese conglomerate. Not like Chinese Americans, but China. One of the biggest pork producers in the country. And they were closing down because cases were traced back. I'm like, oh, okay. Traced back, right? The government can't even figure out who the hell has COVID-19. But Smithfield, the China chicken shack, all right? What is this, like Al's? Was it Al's in Happy Days? When Fonzie jumped like, I don't even, Arnold's. And was it the Chinese guy? I don't remember. I remember there was a chicken shack and Fonzie jumped and he crashed into the chicken shack. Who's running Smithfield's? Arnold? You got to go way back for that one, guys. That was obscure. Anyway, let's just end there. It's not looking good on the meat front. And, we've been saying that for a long time. New story, beef prices soar to record high as meat packing plants shutter. Now, we said this was going to happen. So I was out today. I said, you know, we have no power. So let's go on a little meat excursion. So I was out today. I had my camouflage mask my wife made for me. I look like a real bandito. And I was wearing the mask around and I felt like, you know, hey, nobody knows who I am. Not even the government. So much for your facial recognition software. When you got the mask on and a big pair of shades and everybody looks like the Unabomber. You know what? I don't get it, though. We're out cruising around, and the people who are wearing the mask in their own car, that's a new one that I don't quite get. You know? What's going on in your car that you're wearing the mask? Right? Are you afraid that you're going to get it from the car in front of you or the truck in front of you that it just comes through your vent and boom, it'll just kill you? Is that how freaked out people are out there that you have to drive around in your car with a medical mask on? Yeah, pull the mask down around your neck and breathe. Take some deep breaths and breathe like Lamaze class for the ladies and the moms out there that went to Lamaze and the husbands like me who had to suffer through it and pretend like they were really concerned about the breathing. When you're just there saying like, I'm exhausted at the end of the day and I'm sitting here with a pillow, right? And I don't know what's going on and I'm terrified that I'm having a kid to begin with and this is making me more stressed out. Yeah, breathe. Take the mask down in the car. Breathe. Relax. It's going to be okay. The one guy who had the mask on and he got asphyxiated himself or something. He passed out. He couldn't breathe. He ended up crashing. I was reading about. Relax with the masks, right? The only guy I want to see are guys in masks and cars are the ones going to knock off a bank. Wholesale American beef prices jumped 6% to a record high of $330 per 100 pounds. A 62% increase from the lows in February, guys. 62% increase. Oh, my God. That's insane. It's going to get worse. Because of the virus, meat slaughtering is 40% below where it needs to be to handle all the animals coming to the market, said Arlen Suderman, chief commodities economist at INTL FC Stone. Processing plants were generally in favor of the executive order that would give them a liability cover when reopening. Yet the order still does not solve the problems of employee absenteeism. At least 20 workers in meat and food processing have died, and 5,000 have tested positive or forced to self-quarantine during the coronavirus, according to the United Food and Commercial Workers International Union. So, how many workers are there nationally in meat and food processing? How many millions, right? 20 workers died? Excuse me. That's it? Sorry. It's just honest. What, 20 out of, I mean, you know, for over 400,000 people as an example, 450 or something thousand people went and voted in Wisconsin in the primaries they had a few weeks ago, and they did tracing back to see how many got sick, and it was like 53 people got sick. Do the math. Pandemic? Question mark? Question mark? Wink, wink. New headline. Let's see if we got some good news here. Let's see if we got some good news. End the week on some good news. DeSantis announces Florida will start opening businesses Monday with restrictions. Florida's Governor Ron DeSantis announced Wednesday that beginning Monday, restaurants and stores will be allowed to open at 25% capacity. Kicking off phase one of the state's reopening plan, DeSantis said the order would exclude Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach counties. There's a lot more people in a lot more counties than those. So let's get it rolling. All parts of Florida would be allowed to resume elective surgeries, he said. Well, that's good. That's good news. We know some people who have been waiting for, you know, to get diagnosed further on cancer and things. They've been waiting to get possible treatments and things like that in Florida, and without much success. So let's get that rolling. Because guess what? If you have some type of a cancer or a dangerous ailment, guess what? It's not going to wait around because your bureaucrat said you can't leave the house. And your hospital administrators are making fucking TikTok videos. Christ's sake. How stupid do these people think we are? Both restaurants and retail will be allowed to bring in customers at a 25% capacity, and outdoor dining will be open so long as tables are spaced 6 feet apart. Still, the governor called for masks to be used in face-to-face business. I think it's going to be interesting to go out to dinner and try to eat dinner with a mask. Do you need like a mesh mask for that? Like if you're drinking so you don't dribble all over the place, or do you keep the mask on? Do you bring it below your nose? Do you pull the mask like beyond your nose and then insert the beverage in the top in a pour fashion and pour it into the mask? And then how's that going to work when you go to a bar? Or do you just drink out of a straw? Or will they just, maybe the serious drinkers will get their cocktails intravenously. That's what Nancy will be wheeling around one of those little IV stands where the saline bottles hang down from. She'll be wheeling around that with the IV in her arm.
My chocolates. Hi, everybody. I just have my IV in. I got my vodka IV in, and I just love my chocolates and my vodka IV.
How's that going to work? I heard a rumor that some restaurants are talking about putting up plexiglass between the tables. Now, listen, I spent a lot of time in the penalty box during my hockey career, but I wouldn't suggest that you eat dinner in the fucking penalty box. I think we should just all wear space helmets and NASA diapers. These people are losing it. DeSantis said that the media had an unfortunate habit to conflate shelter in place with social distancing, and said that the state could rebuild Florida's foundations while protecting the most vulnerable. The governor said the movie theaters and gyms would remain closed. Schools would remain closed for the time being. As with nursing home visits, DeSantis pointed to a significant drop in patients seeking medical care for stroke and heart attack symptoms as they fear exposing themselves to coronavirus, which could result in huge health consequences. How the hell can you get treated for a heart attack around here? When everybody's in the hallway, cruising around on hospital beds and making videos. Blowing up surgical gloves and inserting them in their pants. Have you seen these videos by these nurses and whoever else is responsible? Come on. What kind of hospital administrator would let that go on? Some guys, like, you know, some dudes are in bad shape in the ER and these guys are dancing around like it's fucking tryouts for Fame. Yeah. I want to live forever. You know who else wants to fucking live forever? The people in your fucking hospital while you're dancing around. They want to live forever too. There is a lot. I want to learn how to fly. Fly your ass over here and fucking treat me. There's a lot that's been done to try to promote fear, to promote worst case scenarios and drive hysteria, DeSantis said. The worst case thinking has not proven to be true. We've been told over and over again that Florida was going to be like New York, he continued. Oh, he's rubbing it in. I like this guy. No, this guy had the brains at least to get out of Congress because you can't get anything done there. He continued, noting that his state's coronavirus 1,218 deaths so far are barely a fraction of New York's 22,897. Despite reports that Florida would run out of ventilators, DeSantis said 379 patients were on ventilators in the state and over 6,300 ventilators were sitting unused. Yeah, because the ventilators were killing people. We need more ventilators to kill these people. You know, I'm no doctor, but when your death and mortality rate is like 85% of the people that you put on ventilators, maybe don't put them on ventilators. Right? Don't do it. Because whoever told you this is like a quote unquote coronavirus, this is what you're being told by these idiots like Fauci, right? And then you have other people like Dr. Judy Mikovits, who is far more qualified than Fauci when it comes to this stuff, says this is probably not like a traditional coronavirus. There are hints of other things in it. And, you know, it's and then other people say, you know, you don't necessarily treat it the same way you would treat pneumonia. But these dopes have people on ventilators and they're dying, like dropping like flies. And they say, you know what? We'll start taking people off ventilators and look what happens to the death rate. It comes down. Like I said, I'm not a doctor, nor do I play one on YouTube. DeSantis is rubbing it in. I like this death toll, coronavirus death toll, governor. Death match. New York versus Florida. Florida wins. Next up, we have to bracket it out like NCAA. We missed it. We missed the tournament this year. March Madness. We can do coronavirus madness. 50 governors. Get the brackets going. 49 governors. I don't think there's a governor of District of Columbia. Ah, hell, throw in that governor from Puerto Rico and a few airfields of spring water pallets, unused spring water pallets while you're at it. the governor of Puerto Rico is probably under indictment. I don't know. Here we go. Barack Obama goes golfing after Michelle said stay home. I ask you who wears the pants in that family, but it might be both of them. two PSAs featuring former Lady Michelle Obama urging African Americans to stay home in order to prevent the spread of the coronavirus were released last week, but prominent African American radio hosts who have nationally syndicated shows shared the PSAs. I grew up in the hood. Okay. We didn't even have, we didn't know what the news was. And it'd be like, we were the last people to know what the hell was going on. If there was a pandemic, if there was a tidal wave in suburban Philadelphia or in Philadelphia, we were the last people to know. We're out running the street. All we know is when it got dark, about 45 minutes after the street lights came on, you've got to get home. Because both parents, if you're fortunate enough to have both parents, or if you come from a one-parent family, they're home from work, and they get a little antsy after they eat and settle down. So where the hell are the kids? So when the street light comes on, you get your ass home, unless it's the summertime. Then you check in, you come in, hey, can I go back out? You know, you get something to drink or you say hi, and then you, can I go back out? You got to come in and you got to check in with the folks or the folk, right? In the hood, if the cops rolled up back in the day and said, hey, you guys got to be 6 feet apart, that's not cool. What are you guys doing out on the street? We'd say, get the hell out of here. And it'd be like maybe three or four of us, right? And then if the cops gave us a hard time, there would be like 60 people there within a minute and a half coming out of nowhere, and not cops. Kids and teenagers, get out of here, beat it. You don't belong in here. You don't do us any favors. And it would be like the word gets out on the street. Hey, there's cops here, and they're hassling some people. And everybody shows up and shoos them out of the neighborhood. Get out of here. So I don't know how many people in the hood are listening to nationally syndicated radio shows, but it's cool. And I'm not saying that all African-Americans are in the hood, but I'm just saying that when I grew up, that's how it was as far as we weren't exactly on the news pipeline. In some of the communities, you know what I mean? Because you're out doing other things and you're bebopping around, and a lot of people have to work. So they don't have time to catch up on the news, so to speak. Apparently, her husband didn't get the memo. The day after the PSAs were released, Barack Obama was seen playing golf at the Robert Trent Golf Club in Gainesville, Virginia. Politico Playbook reported. Well, that could either be true or not true with Politico. Former Vice President Barack, former President Barack Obama, what's going on with this story? Playing golf at Robert Trent Golf Club. They've had a picture. Membership at the club is by invitation only, according to its website. When Obama joined the club in 2017, annual membership fees and dues to the club are about $15,000. Though every former U.S. president reportedly has an honorary membership and those fees are waived. What the hell would you put that in the story for, Politico? 15 grand is nothing to join a golf club. These reporters think that's a lot of money? Jesus. For a golf club? Wow. Anyway, it's kind of funny. She does these PSAs and then he's out golfing. What are you supposed to do? Sit in the house all day? Here's a good one. Christopher Steele reveals he believes Hillary Clinton and Susan Rice knew about his anti-Trump research. Right? Somebody cue up Captain Obvious again. Get him in here. Get Captain Obvious. Captain Obvious and Captain Morgan need to have their own podcast. Steele recently testified in a British court that he believed both then Democratic president nominee Hillary Clinton and Obama National Security Advisor Susan Rice were aware of his dossier research as it was going on in the summer of 2016. Yeah, I'd say since Hillary's campaign and the DNC paid for it and Perkins Coie paid for it, the law firm, the DNC front, whoops, did I say that? Paid for it, I think Steele would probably have a pretty good idea of who was aware of it. I mean, are we still talking about this thing? Like it's not known or understood who was behind it? Steele told a British court he believed he had been hired by the Fusion GPS firm owned by Glenn Simpson through the Democratic National Committee-linked law firm Perkins Coie to assist the Clinton campaign during the election. according to a transcript of the testimony. What they got a quote here.
I presumed it was the Clinton campaign, and Glenn Simpson had indicated that.
This is like my bad hoity-toity thing for my British. I guess I could go British, but...
But I was not aware of the technicality of it being the DNC, and it was actually the client of Perkins Coie.
Steele testified in March under questioning from lawyers for the Russian bankers suing over his research. You knew it was the leadership of the Clinton presidential campaign, didn't you? A lawyer for the businessman asked.
I believe it was the campaign, yes. Yes, I do.
Steele answered. And this is fun. This is like the old radio. Everybody gather around the radio. Remember, I'm reading this for the first time, so if there's little delays, I'm trying to frame it. You also understood that Hillary Clinton herself was aware of what you were doing, the lawyer asked.
I think Glenn had mentioned it, but it wasn't clear.
Okay, Steele answered. This guy is like, either this guy's a Samanhead. Either this guy's one step above Benny Hill over there in the UK, or he's just lying through his teeth. I'm going to say a combination. Then Steele was confronted with what lawyers said were notes he took at a meeting with the FBI in 2016, in which he purported to tell agents that Clinton was aware of his research. The lawyers read from those notes during the court proceedings. A day later, in additional testimony, Steele was asked how he came to present some of his dossier findings to the U.S. First of all, they're not findings. This is concocted bullshit. To the U.S. State Department during an October 2016 meeting with then-Deputy Assistant Secretary of State Kathleen Kavalik. The former British MI6 agent turned private intelligence investigator said his meeting was set up by state officials Jonathan Weiner and Victoria Nuland after longtime Clinton advisor and friend Strobe Talbot had reached out.
Oh, good old boy. Hey, old chap Strobe. Strobe Talbot's here, everybody. Yay, golf clap, Strobe. Ooh, I love Strobe. He is such a joy to hang out with. Ooh, Strobe.
Fucking asshole. Steele, a little bit of background, if I may, your lordship, on that. I want to be called lordship around my house from now on, goddammit.
Both National Security Advisor at the time, Susan Rice, and Assistant Secretary of State Victoria Nuland, who were the key policymakers on Russia, had been colleagues of Mr. Talbot, and I, although he didn't state it explicitly, one or either or both of them had been briefed him on the work we were doing.
So, he's throwing everybody under the bus. Or I guess it's a double-decker bus over there, right? He also revealed that one piece of anti-Trump information he obtained in 2016, a since debunked claim that Trump secretly may have communicated with Russia through a computer server at the Alpha Bank, didn't come from Russian intelligence source, but rather was brought to his attention by one of the lawyers at Perkins Coie. And Steele divulged he paid some of his sources of information as much as $3,000 to $5,000 a month, prompting lawyers for the plaintiffs to ask whether that might have compromised some of the information he got. Steele also told the court that most of his emails and other documents related to the dossier were destroyed by early January 2017 after he completed the project. In other words, right before Trump was inaugurated. Yeah. I'm sure he was told, get rid of that stuff. Get rid of it. They're coming for you.
We must wipe this with a cloth. Should I What do you mean, get rid of it? Like, should I wipe it with a cloth or just really just wipe it? I mean, you must be more precise.
This guy is on the loose. Nothing's going to happen to this guy either. You know why? He's got so much dirt on all these guys. Because if I were him, and I guess at one point I was him, long before he was him, I was him. I'd have dirt on everybody, and we did have dirt on everybody, and that's how you play the game, and it is a game to these guys. This is just a game. They love it. They love playing the game. They're political animals. The fact that he's even there testifying is proof that he loves the game, and he has no fear. And if you watch the mannerisms and behaviors of guys like Comey and McCabe and Strzok and Page and all these guys, even during this Flynn thing, when they're on Twitter, they have no fear. There's not a bone in their body that thinks that they're going to be indicted for anything. I'm sure they downloaded it all before they got out, guys. They got everything on Wiener's laptop. They got everything about anybody who's important in government. They got it all. All sitting somewhere on thumb drives, on disks, on portable hard drives, tucked away for a rainy day. And if somebody calls their number in federal court and shows up at their house at 5:30 a.m., with the ballistic vests on, with the rifles, with the handcuffs, it's time to tap our arsenal of dirt. You know why? Because that's what J. Edgar Hoover did. The man with the most influence on the Federal Bureau of Investigation, that's how he rolled, and that's how these guys roll. They have their get-out-of-jail-free card for a rainy day, and it's probably, I won't say probably, it's way more interesting than anything you've ever read that's been in the news in the last 25, 30 years. Right? They start dropping bombs on who is with who and who pays who and who bangs who. And we haven't even gotten to the Epstein follies and things like that. I mean, these guys have plenty of get-out-of-jail-free cards that they've been saving for a rainy day. And if their numbers get called, boy, you better believe they're going to use them. And that's why I don't think their numbers are going to get called. Because it's a protection racket down there. We only know. If you ever see the top of an iceberg, and we'll end on this. And I appreciate you guys listening. You ever see the top of an iceberg? You're like, wow, that's pretty big. Let's just say that everything we know about the corruption in the Department of Justice and the FBI in the last, let's say, 5 years. Okay, everything we know about it is a lot now. And the body of work is growing, continues to grow. Okay, so let's say that's like the top of an iceberg that you can see. If you're on a ship and you're like, wow, that iceberg's big. If you know anything about icebergs, below the water surface, they're often 4, 5, 6, 7 times the size of what you see on the surface. So the underwater portions of the icebergs are what these guys have as far as corruption, the inside knowledge. Now, the people who are in charge of the top of the iceberg, like Christopher Wray and Bill Barr, they don't want the stuff to come out about the bottom of the ice because it's way more interesting, like I said, than the things we know now. So keep that in mind when you hear about this guy's going to jail and that guy's going to jail and this guy's going to jail. I believe it when I see it. So, good stuff. We'll do this again on Monday. We'll have another good week coming up on, there's so much to do, and I didn't get to do any of it today because I had no juice. And I was playing Mechanic, which is cool. It's good to go back every now and then to your roots. I wouldn't say roots, but I like building cars when I was in my teens. Probably because I got a car and it didn't run, and you had to get a job and get it to run if you wanted to go places. So that's a good motivation. and you didn't have enough money to take it to a mechanic. So you learn how to do it yourself. Go out and buy yourself a couple Chilton's manuals for like $14 at Pep Boys on whatever car you had. And you sit there and you go through your books, your Chilton books, whenever there's a problem, and you learn how to fix it yourself. So it's good to know what to a certain point about cars. Like now today with computers, of course, things are more complicated, but we appreciate the support that you've been showing us on patreon.com/truepundit. And also you guys have been reading True Pundit. We have more readers recently, many more readers, and that's good for us. Help get the word out, help spread our word and about what we're doing and some of the schemes that we're covering. And we got plenty more schemes, and it's going to be busy around here for a long time, but try to have a good weekend. And thanks for hanging in with us. And again, thanks for all the nice comments about the videos that we have of the podcast on patreon.com/truepundit. That's going well. I'm glad we started that. I like hearing from people too. And I do read most of it, even when people give me a hard time. It's cool. About certain things. A lot of things I say, I'm just joking around. And I think it's important that we find the time to laugh. Some people read the news and they can't. They're not funny. I personally found, and I'll end on this note, I've personally found that, and I'll talk to the camera a little bit because I've been focused on the screen. I've personally found that the anger, rage shtick, it doesn't work for me anymore. I said, well, watch certain guys and they're angry all the time. I get it. It is entertaining, I guess, to a certain standpoint, but you can't be angry all the time, because then when there are things that you should be angry about, how do you differentiate? Right. Number one. Number two, it's not healthy. It's not healthy to be fuming all the time you see something, right? It might be natural when you read some of these stories. You're just like, what the hell is going on here? Okay, that's fine. But what we do here is we just bust balls and make fun of things and laugh, because the stuff is so bizarre and we can't do a goddamn thing about it, even though some of us are convinced we can, that I think it's important to laugh. So I hope that folks are out there getting a few chuckles out of these things, because I get a few chuckles out of when I do this stuff. And it kind of gives me a little bit of fuel when you laugh. It's like, all right, well, you know, at least you're looking at, you're being optimistic and things like that. But, I have heard from some other conservatives who have podcasts saying, hey, how can I be funny? It's like, I don't know. How can you be funny? I don't, because you say a lot of things and it's really funny. I mean, how can I do that? How do you write that? I said, look, that's just me, man. That's not, there's no writing. This is just me. This comes from a history of getting your ass whooped in the streets. If you couldn't stand it, you needed two things when I was growing up. Right. And we didn't have any parents. I didn't have any parents who gave two shits about us. Let me rephrase. I didn't have any parents who had the luxury of knowing where we were all the time, like today a lot of parents do, right? That's a luxury. My parents, before my dad split when I was 12, were always hustling. They were always working. And they just figured, look, these guys will be all right. They're smart kids, right? So out on the street, if you can't fight, first of all, you can't fight all the time, but sometimes you need to fight. And sometimes you're going to get your ass whooped. Sometimes you're going to fight bigger guys and you know you're going to take a beating, but you got to do it because it's like your crew's there. And if you don't take your beating and give it your best shot, you don't get the respect. And it's funny growing up in the 70s. But you didn't have to fight that much if you could just destroy people with comebacks and words and zingers and jokes. Where even if you broke balls against somebody who was a quote-unquote enemy and you just tore them to shreds and even they laughed, okay, that's when you know everything's going to be okay. So because even the guy who wants to punch your lights out, you made him stop and laugh at himself, then it, you're good to go. Then it's like, okay, now we're all friends and that's been avoided. Now where are we going to go get some beer? Yeah, I know we're in sixth or seventh grade, but let's go get some people to buy you some beer, damn it. Oh, man. I know some of those boys listen to this back in Havertown and Upper Darby and Darby and Broomall and Springfield and even Newtown Square. Some of the dudes, their families were doing better were in Newtown Square and around there and C. Kane and Folkcroft and Colwyn and all through there, right? All these dudes. I wouldn't trade those days for anything. Those were great times growing up and not a lot of parental guidance, but we made it. We made it out. We survived and good times to talk about. And so for other folks out there, I don't know how you can be funny. Maybe try not to take things so serious all the time and be a little bit more lighthearted every now and then. And understand that, I mean, my 360-degree view of this is no matter how hard we try, we're just a few people, right? And there's bigger, more powerful people at play behind the scenes here. And so you can't always change. You can try. There's nothing wrong with trying to change things. So some things you just have to shake your head at and try to have a laugh and go about your merry way so it doesn't jack up your blood pressure every time you read something or talk to somebody. So thanks for your support out there. We'll do it again Monday. And hang in there this weekend and hang in there. That's all I could say. God bless you, and I'll see you then. Thank you.